Microphone, something will go wrong. Thank you very much, Geneva Environment Network, for this. Thank you also for the format. I'm notorious for going into tangents, like a monkey going from tree branch to tree branch. So I actually had to script my remarks for the slides, if they work. Anyway, again, I tried to show the slide as well. So when the global community discusses local action, indigenous people are rightly recognized as essential. However, to achieve true impact, we must ensure that we don't separate the knowledge from the people who carry it. And in many cases, they see our knowledge as a magic seed. There's a strong desire to integrate our ancestral knowledge into global biodiversity targets. And we share the goal, obviously, of a healed planet, but true integration requires recognizing us as distinct rights holders, not as just mere stakeholders. So historically, international frameworks have sometimes leaned towards extraction. And this is why International Indian Treaty Council and other indigenous peoples organizations need to step back from several negotiations, including some of the Article 8J ones, where the focus was heavily on access and benefit sharing rather than inherent rights. Therefore, we must avoid the temptation to place indigenous knowledge in a glass case. We cannot seek the benefits of our traditions while hesitating to fully commit to the rights and the land rights and consent that sustain them. Because knowledge is a seed, however, the people, we are the soil. Our governance, our cultures, and our territorial defense are the living ecosystems that actually keep this knowledge alive. And that is why terminology matters. Using broad categories like IPLC can inadvertently blur distinct rights-bearing peoples. This is conflation, and conflation risks diluting the specific obligations that member states have under international law. And we also see challenges to our representation. Recent procedural proposals to replace our 7 indigenous social cultural regions with standard UN regions, the exchange of it, risks undermining the very structures that allow us to participate meaningfully in processes like COP17. And we also see the impact of this on the ground. Because, for example, the free power from consent to tripartite terminology introduces flexibility where there should be certainty. Allowing states to opt for mere, quote-unquote, approval and involvement waters down the fundamental standard of free, prior, and informed consent. Like I said, we see this on the ground. While Target 3 acknowledges land rights, essential safeguards like the Declaration of Rights of Indigenous Peoples, Article 45, is sometimes overlooked, leading to continued displacement in the name of conservation. Even the new permanent body on AJ reflects these ongoing tensions. Advancing without full indigenous consensus, omitting strong rights-based language and retaining contested term signals a need for deeper alignment. So we need to shift from a model of conditional inclusion to one of genuine partnership. We cannot be praised rhetorically while our institutional and legal standing remains fragile. Indigenous knowledge is not merely a technical input for biodiversity planning. It is an extension of our collective identity, completely inseparable from our ancestral territories. What the global framework categorizes as local action, we experience as governance. And it is an active exercise of our laws and stewardship that has sustained biodiversity for millennia. Recognizing these peoples as distinct rights holders is not about complicating the process. It is about establishing the legal and ethical clarity necessary for the framework's true success. So as we build the bridge from this room in Geneva to COP17 in Yerevan, our shared objectives must be to ensure that ambition is matched by legitimacy, and effectiveness. A successful COP17 will be measured not just by high-level declarations, but whether implementation models actively strengthen indigenous governance and territorial security on the ground. Creating permanent institutions is a positive step, but permanence must be accompanied by normative change. The rules of engagement must reflect our rights. Effective implementation requires that free, prior, informed consent be treated as a foundational, non-negotiable baseline rather than a flexible policy option. If area-based conservation expands without securing land rights, the very knowledge we seek to protect will be lost. The seed simply cannot thrive without its soil. So finally, we are already taking action for nature. But remember that no butterfly emerges from a glass case. If you protect the soil, the seed will grow. And I thank you.